Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kalb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest T.J. Woodward, who is the author of Conscious Being, Awakening to Your True Nature. T.J. has created a book that is, I guess, really the spiritual principles of many different spiritual pathways and wisdom handed down through the years from many different beings that were enlightened, realized, or just really understood what consciousness was. And it's a delightful book for those on the path. Welcome, TJ. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show, Dr. Kalb. It's a delight to be here.
So, you are in San Francisco, is that right?
I am, yes.
And you have an Awakened Living spiritual community, and you have Awakened Living TV show and Living Radio. So you're on the air educating people about what you found out.
Yes, yeah, my own experience, which I'm hoping we can get into, of really going through quite a dark period in my life and coming through that and having this great awakening experience and recognizing that, you know, what, as you so beautifully said in the opening, so many masters throughout time have been telling us about, you know, spiritual awakening and the mystical connection. And it seems like what's happening on the planet right now is so many of us are dedicated to this in our own lives. So I've written the book, and my TV show and my radio show are all dedicated to being in conversation about consciousness and about spiritual awakening and how we do that in our everyday lives. So kind of taking it from concepts and ideology to like real life experiences for each of us.
I had really was interested in something Carolyn Mace said in one of her workshops. She said that in order for one to go from a horizontal existence to a vertical existence, which is more of a conscious existence, one either has to lose everything or think that they're going to lose everything. And you and I had similar experiences, but with a difference that's interesting. I was told before my awakening that I was going to die. I'm clairvoyant. I was born clairvoyant, but I was told this. But then all my other friends who were clairvoyant were also told it. Even my mother, when I was talking to her, she said, "I'm really afraid you're going to be in a car accident," you know, because she's very intuitive as well. And everybody agreed that I was going to die in a car accident. So what does that mean? I'm going to lose everything, right? So it took me about 6 hours to release everything. I just went into a releasing state and released everything. And I was fine. I even went and drove on the highway. I didn't care. But then 2 weeks passed, and then another week passed, and the clairvoyance started coming back going, "Well, you know, you're probably not going to die," you know?
Wow.
So that was my dark night of the soul, which actually passed in 6 hours. I was actually able to release everything, all relationships, all material things, everything. 6 hours, gone, and then I didn't have to die.
Wow, that's really
isn't
a
that
powerful
interesting
story? Yeah,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the
so
things
tell
that
us
I
about
recognize
your yeah, tell us about your experience, because it was a little bit more prolonged and a little bit more gut-wrenching, I think.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it'd be more gut-wrenching than knowing we're going to die, you know, because I think that's the ultimate. It feels like in hearing your story, and, you know, I hope this sound comes out the right way, but you were gifted with having that be such a short experience, because when we really come to terms with our own death, which it sounds like you did, of course everything can be released, right? So
my
journey was a little... Yeah. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that before I kind of tell my story, I just wanted to share something that was a big part of my own awakening, and that is recognizing that most of us, and certainly it was true in my life, I was holding on to so many stories of blame and wrongdoing by others and by myself.
Yeah.
And I remember
woundology. Woundology. That's what Carolyn Mace calls it. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I've never heard that.
Yeah.
Well, one of my close friends of 25 years passed away in a car accident, and, you know, we had not resolved the stuff from our past. And what happened is, when I got news of that, within hours, I just felt an immediate release and a sense of forgiveness for myself and for him. And I began to ponder, what is it about his death that made it so easy for me to forgive myself and forgive him for everything we had done? And that question, you know, that question, what made that so easy, has been really fundamental in recognizing that the only reason we're holding on to it, and I'll speak out of my own experience, the only reason I was still holding on is a belief that I needed to hold on. So it was instant when, you know, for me, within hours, like you said, slightly different story, but a similar outcome.
Yeah. Well, some people don't have that gift, though. Some people, when they're someone that they're fighting with dies, they have a sense of never being able to resolve it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, I think that for me, this experience for me really happened after a lot of my awakening had happened. And so I feel like I had a perspective on it, because I recognized very quickly, I always believed that we would have a way to come together and to, you know, talk through things and let go of what needed to be. So I knew on a spiritual level, I knew that we were both wanting to forgive. So it came easily for me at that point.
Yeah. So what else would you say was important in your story to get through the dark night of the soul?
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, and I didn't really tell my story. I feel like, you know, I came into spiritual teaching really early in life. In my early 20s, I met a woman that really changed my life, Mary Helen Brownell, who was one of the most enlightened people I had ever met. And she taught really through the way she was being in the world, far more than what she was saying. And I went to India and had some great experiences. And then when I came into like my late 20s or early 30s, I think I began to want... It was like I had reverted in a way, you know, back to wanting to create my life from the outside in again, becoming successful. In my mind meant, you know, creating my externals looking a certain way. So the trajectory of my life, you know, when I got into my 30s, I opened a business and I kind of lost touch. And I have to be careful the way I say this, because I ultimately feel and know that this is all of it part of our spiritual journey. But my 30s were really about external and about achieving again. And I felt like I was getting more and more empty on the inside and trying to create more on the outside to fix that. And so in my late 30s, when I was so blessed with listening to that inner calling to go into the ministry, to go into spiritual teaching, I had the knowing that I wanted to write a book. My world actually did collapse, my external world, as soon as I said yes to that deeper calling. And what I know in retrospect, or what I feel in retrospect, is that I had built my life, you know, in a very egoic way. So, of course, all of that had to crumble in order for me to really wake up to this greater reality of who I am. So, you know, I really... As painful as it was, because I literally did lose everything and found myself, you know, laying on the couch depressed for several months before I had really this awakening experience. I look at that now as the most rich time of my life, because it was really where the fertilizer was, you know, building this new life I'm living now.
Yeah, I think when we're in crisis, you know, whether it's a health crisis, a financial crisis, a relationship crisis, or all three at once, which sometimes happens, we are with ourselves. We're with that part of ourselves that was always with us and will always be with us after our death. And we're the closest then. I mean, I remember being deathly ill, not knowing if I was going to survive. And, in fact, I called my spiritual father, and I said, am I going to die? And he said, no, but you're going to feel like you're dying. You know,
right.
That was the answer. So, but I was with myself. I was with that part of myself. And then that part of myself carefully gave me instructions on how to get out of the danger.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm a doctor, so, you know, that included antibiotics, that included, you know, other things like, you know, supplements. And but it was so funny because my friends would come in and say, do you think you should be directing your care? You're deathly ill. And I said, yeah, I think I should, because what's directing my care is my higher self.
Yeah. That's so powerful.
And yes, I do. Now I asked my other friends. I have a doctor here with me, Dr. Brad Gould, who can muscle test just with his fingers. It's really great. You know, he can muscle test over the phone, where I can't really do that. And so, you know, I can call him up and say, look, you know, I'm getting that I should do this, this, and this. Are you getting the same thing? And then he'd test and say, yeah, you need to do that. And then you might need to think about this too. You know, so I had other people I was checking with. But I was still directing my own care. By me, I mean my higher self was directing my way out of it. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I am a doctor. I am a medical doctor, so I know what I'm doing. But on the other hand, it was interesting that some of my good friends who were medical also were saying, do you think you should be doing this? You know, like, is this smart?
Yeah, because
I survived, so I guess it was the right thing to do.
I guess so. Yeah, because so much, you know, in the medical profession, of course, it would be not looked at as wise to do that, and yet
right.
You had tapped into your higher self, knowing that that was what was guiding you, and that was certainly my experience. Listening,
yeah, it was
to
the only thing there.
Yeah.
I couldn't watch TV. I had to have help getting out of bed to go to the bathroom. You know, I mean. You're really just with your higher self. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
That's all you're that's your company, you know.
Yeah.
So it is interesting. So I think we all create circumstances so that that experience happens. And then you have a deep, deep, deep trust of that connection then when it gets you out of really sticky wickets, you know.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, really recognizing that reality, that higher self reality is the
mm-hmm.
ultimate reality. And thank you for framing it in the way you did. You know, I remember when I was in the midst of it, knowing on one level my higher self was really, you know, choosing this so that I could awaken and really
right.
being grateful for that, and at the same time embracing the pain because there was plenty. So I think
right.
what my higher self was really saying to me so clearly is embrace this experience, you know, really
mm-hmm.
embrace this and recognize that this, all of this was the fuel. And another way to frame it
mm-hmm.
was I kept knowing that when I get through this, I'm going to have something to share, because this is
right.
the experience that it seems that people need or want some guidance or some support as
mm-hmm.
they're going through. So I feel like it's a great gift, ultimately, that I had that experience.
I was given a dream. It was kind of like a waking dream, but it was a very interesting dream that that illustrates the principle you just talked about. In the dream, I was on a path that took me through woods, underwater, you know, all these different scenarios. And the only thing that was guiding me was Christmas lights, you know, how Christmas lights are on the outside of a house. There were Christmas lights. And so I would follow the path with the Christmas lights. And, you know, sometimes they get very dim and you could hardly see them, like especially when they were underwater and fog. And then finally, at the end of the journey, I ended up on this island with everything I could ever want or need. You know, just everything was met. And then that was symbolic of, if you follow your guidance, everything will be provided. You don't have to, you know, create anything for yourself. You know, it'll just be provided. And, you know, sometimes it's really clear where the Christmas lights are. Sometimes they're really foggy and you can hardly make them out, and which is life. You know, sometimes you hear your guidance really well. Sometimes you're not sure if you can hear it at all. But the idea is that you have guidance throughout your entire life. But if you get to the other side of it, everything's provided. You never have to worry about anything, which is mentorship,
yeah,
as you know.
Yeah, and that's the greatest paradox is when we arrive there. You know, for me, when I arrived there, it was kind of, you know, and I'll say this carefully, but there was a lot of humor for me because I was laughing because it was like, this has been here all along. I literally just
yeah.
couldn't, for whatever reason, access it or see it or embrace it.
Right.
And I love that you draw the distinction between that and creation. Early in my, or kind of in the middle, in the 30s when I was going through that externally focused life, I grabbed on to a spiritual teaching that was all about manifesting, all about holding an affirmation and creating. And that actually got me into some trouble because I was really doing that through my ego quite a lot.
Right.
And
it's easy to do that,
And so it's just an interesting and wonderful distinction you've drawn there. It's certainly my experience.
Yeah, it is a guidance. I mean, when people ask me what I want to create, I say to them, you know, I really don't know what's in my future. I have some ideas because I've been told some of the things that I'm supposed to accomplish before I leave, okay? But, you know, I don't really imagine my life because I know that the life that is ahead of me is probably much more spectacular than what I could imagine.
Amen to that. That's certainly true for me.
So yeah. I'd rather go into meditation and ask, just show me what you need me to do now, knowing that it will eventually lead to that island of where everything is, anything I could possibly want or need is provided, you know.
Yeah, and for me, certainly, what helped me and what continues to guide me is recognizing what my purpose here is. Because part of that, for me, and I'll speak only out of my own experience, when I was doing that in my mind, creating the life of my dream, it was really about what I could get, you know, what I could get, what my life would look like. And when that shifted for me to who am I here to be, what is my purpose? And I love the way you framed it. What is mine to do now? And so the more I can align with my purpose, which really is to awaken, stay awakened, and then share that gift with others, it becomes far less about me and my own needs. And then, you know, we're on this island where everything's provided all the time. I just don't always know that.
Yeah, and that's like a state of consciousness. That island represents a state of consciousness where Spirit provides for you even when you don't know what you need. You know, you don't know what's up ahead of the curve on the road. You know, there might be something there that you don't even knows in your path, but just the knowing that you'll be provided for, whatever you need will be provided. It reminds me of a Twilight Zone that I saw. I'm old enough to have actually been around when Twilight Zone was playing. it was this person that sold people things for like $200, something that they would need in their future. And it was so interesting because each person needed something. Like, for example, one person was sold a pair of scissors for $200. Well, you know, scissors, I mean, that's a lot for scissors, but she had the accident of having a scarf wrap around her head or around her neck and then get caught in a door, and so she was being strangled. But she had the scissors so she could cut the scarf and then, you know, not be strangled. So that's sort of what I think. You know, we're in the world. I mean, we're going to have some things that are near misses, you know. We're going to have some things that where we might need something to get out of a rudder or some danger. So, you know, it'll be provided. But we don't know what it is, you know, not right now.
Yeah.
So that's what I think. I mean, you have to have faith, and it really is the trust word, the faith word. You have to have faith that whatever it is in your future, you'll be able to come out on the other side without too much problems, you know. You'll be provided for it. The spiritual protection will be there.
Yeah, I love the way you framed it earlier, because when I, through that experience, when I really made friends with and came to really trust, as you're saying, my higher self, I recognize that that's like the metaphoric pair of scissors, right? Because I don't necessarily know what I'm going to need, but when I absolutely trust that higher self and that internal guidance system, I know that whatever is presented, I can navigate that because I've connected with that. And maybe that's the simplest definition of awakening, is that we've awakened to recognize that that reality is greater than what we call this earth plane or this reality, or this, you know, relative reality that we experience in the world.
Yeah, I just have a feeling that it is. I remember when I was like 4 or 5, looking in the mirror and saying to the person in the mirror, I love you. But what it was my higher self saying that to my reflection.
Yeah.
And then I know, because I had that experience, that that higher self will be with me after death. I'll probably merge into it. You see what I mean? It will probably merge at that point. And my awareness will be much more centered in that higher self awareness. So that part is eternal. So therefore, it's like the Course in Miracles. Nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists. If the only reality is that which does not change over time, then really your higher self, your eternal self, is the reality. And then your opinion of yourself here is this body is unreal, you know, because it's not going to last.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing to fear, because nothing can take your life, your eternal life. Nothing can take that.
Yeah, and
you see,
I love
nothing can take that
going.
Away from you.
Yeah, and I love where you're going, because you're talking about merging with that. And I suppose that what we're talking about that seems like it's happening now in an accelerated rate on the planet is more and more of us are knowing that. And not only that we will one day merge, but really recognizing that's who we are now. You know,
right.
That is, as you're saying.
Yeah, walking
saying,
in that. Privilege. Yeah, walking in that consciousness, yeah. Because that really is walking in meditation, you know, always being open to those signals coming in from the higher realms that are flashes of what you need to do right now, you know, like the constant stream of information about what is important right now.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what keeps you in the now, because you really can't worry about what's happening tomorrow, because you're concentrating on what now is important.
Yeah.
You have to stay focused right now.
Yeah, because we know the greatest illusion is that there's a tomorrow, you know, that there's still there to get
there
to.
There really isn't.
You know,
there's only now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the greatest, you know, that's the greatest spirit teaching of all, right? That this is it, mm-hmm. right in this moment. Yeah.
So what do you think about this phenomena of time speeding up? You know, the weeks going faster and faster?
Well, I think I can say in the human realm, and if you're referring to kind of those of us who are experiencing that seems to be happening, is that what you're asking?
Yeah. It just seems like a week goes by in 3 days, you know. It's like, and I don't think it's because I'm 60. I think even my employees who are 40 years old are experiencing the same thing, you know. It's not just a function of aging.
Yeah, I mean, because I was going to say there's certainly that. I mean, it occurs to me that, you know, when we're really young, a day is a far more significant portion
right.
of our life.
And that's probably still true.
And there is still something else happening. I feel like as more and more of us are recognizing what mystics have been saying for centuries, which is that there is only one moment. It's this now experience and the mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, Albert Einstein talks a lot about that, how really it's all happening. I think he said something like time exists only so everything doesn't happen at once. Well, really, actually, everything is happening right here. So the more and more of us who are living that, I think that this other experience of time, I don't know, sometimes it feels like it's speeding up, sometimes it feels like it completely stops, like it doesn't exist at all. So it's really, you know, it can be so disorienting as we awaken, because what we thought was real becomes so unreal, including the concept of time.
Right. Well, it certainly is, you know, it seems to be changing for a lot of people. I mean, maybe not everybody, I don't know, but at least for the people who are aware of the spiritual energy coming in, it seems like time is just really speeding up.
Yes, I agree. Certainly true in my experience. And like I said, either that or it just stopped at some moment.
Right.
So I really recognize there is no time.
Right. So Einstein probably understood a lot. You have some very interesting quotes from Einstein in your book. I really appreciate them. Einstein probably understood the concept of space-time better than most of us do, you know, seeing that he invented it, you know, like he just wanted to figure it out, you know. So he probably, but, you know, he was such a spiritual person. It was incredible.
Yeah. you know, I didn't know that until much later in my life. I just thought of him as a scientist, and it's so fascinating how in our culture we separate the two. You know, so many people, you know, I'm always amazed when I hear questions like science or spirituality, and I'm thinking, wow, I mean, someone like Einstein is really speaking, you know, in a way that it really is embracing both of those.
Yeah, I have relatives that are famous scientists, and they have flat-out spiritual hearing. I mean, spiritual hearing, just like I do, and they know it. And that, you know, my cousin is the expert on mitochondrial DNA. He's a geneticist. And he has gone so far with his career because of he can hear. You know, he knows what to do next. He's done a whole bunch for muscular dystrophy and a whole bunch of other inherited, you know, diseases that are mitochondrial-based, you know. So, yeah, I'd say a lot of really, really great scientists have spiritual hearing, and some know it. Some do.
Yeah.
Some realize that what they're hearing is coming from their higher self or their guides or, you know, whatever, but they know that they don't know that, you know, but they can hear and they do wonderful things because they can hear.
And they trust that, it sounds like. You know,
they trust
bringing
it
up, I keep thinking of how, you know, what occurs to me is how belief and opinion gets in the way of us experiencing our higher self, right? Because as soon as, and this is like very much what quantum physics is now recognizing, you know, once I call something something, it manifests. Now, again, it really is, we just recognize that reality, that it appears to manifest. And so the more I can move beyond belief and beyond opinions, the more I can open up to a greater level of consciousness. And so in that way, you know, having someone like Einstein who questioned everything, you know, and that's really what's so fascinating is the more I question, in other words, the less I try to know, the more ability I have to understand. And that's probably been the greatest paradox for me during this awakening process, is recognizing that this is not about belief. It's not about ideology. It's not about calling this as fact, but really opening up to these greater levels of reality and these higher levels of consciousness, which are about curiosity, not about knowing, not, you know, knowing in our mind at least.
And, you know, my belief is that when you're able to access the higher realms and you have the right files in your brain, you know, in other words, the right language and the right understanding, all of the answers are out there. I mean, I may not be able to understand them because I'm not an engineer, but because I'm a doctor, I can understand all sorts of stuff that's coming in about what causes disease and what you can do to prevent it and correct it, you know. When you have the right files, in other words, the right background, the information coming in can solve all sorts of problems, you know, Fukushima, you know, the environmental pollution, the problem with GMO contamination of our food, the chemtrails, all the stuff out there that might be threatening our health or our well-being. There's answers on how to clean it up, even if we can't imagine what they are. At one level of consciousness, at another level of consciousness, I think we're going to be able to be given those answers.
You know, yeah, I love
refuse to believe that we've screwed up this planet beyond the point where we can fix it, you know.
Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, and of course we can return to Einstein with that, which is what you're saying, is that the problem cannot be solved at the level of consciousness that created it.
Exactly
what
that created it. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right.
So in that
at
way,
another level of consciousness, those answers that are there, because the technologies, you know, the technologies that we've been allowed to have on this planet have a cap on them, and they have a cap on them because we're not spiritually evolved enough not to use them as weapons. So we've not seen all the technology that we're going to be allowed to have when our consciousness changes.
And you're really tapping into like a conversation I just love being in, which is that this is so as each of us make our commitment to our own awakening, then all of a sudden this technology that we're using for, you know, for destruction becomes about, you know, using it for life. I just love where you're going with it, because that really is the shift, you know, as mm-hmm. we shift into these higher levels of awareness, and as more and more yeah. of us do this, we get to use what we would call our ego. The way I say it is our personality serves as a vehicle for spirit. So
right.
you've come with the gift of being a doctor. You know, some of us have come with being speakers, whatever it is that we've come here. When we harness mm-hmm. that as spirit, then great things can happen for ourselves and for
right.
humanity.
Yeah, let me give you an example on free energy. I've done this radio show for 20 years, so I've interviewed a lot of people every week, okay? Plus, I had a TV show for 6 years. I met them all in person, you know, Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, Bernie Siegel, you know, all those people, Andrew Weil, I met all of them. So basically, this is what I know from my previous interviews. I know that free energy isn't free. That's a common misunderstanding, because if you look at the physics, Tom Bearden did the physics, if you want to look it up. Tom Bearden proved that there's a formula in free energy where if you have massive use of free energy on a planet, it changes time. And what happens is your sun can burn out sooner. So if you had uncontrolled free energy, and you can imagine with free energy how populated this planet could get without population control, our sun would burn out very quickly. And it actually has happened in other civilizations, according to some authors. Okay, so in fact, the Greys, they think that they burned out their sun through the uncontrolled use of free energy. So you see what I'm saying? We can't have certain technology because we're not there yet. We don't have population control. And without that, free energy could really get us in trouble. So you see how that's very interesting.
Yeah, because it really, this what we keep returning to in our conversation that I love is it's all about consciousness, right? So we can create technologies on, and for lack of better terminology, a lower level of consciousness. And if we create from
we
that
could
place,
destroy ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
but if we're at a higher level of consciousness and we, you know, we, through our own policing of ourselves, don't have, you know, 8 children each, you know, if we go to a steady state where the planet has the correct number of people in order not to damage the planet or damage the humans, you know, through famine and war and plague. So, you know, if we were able to be at a level of consciousness where we could be good stewards of this planet, then we could have free energy.
Yeah,
and, you know, life would be very cheap. If you have free energy, you don't have to work a lot, you know, work like, you know, doing stuff you don't want to do.
Well, this is,
you know,
exactly
like go
what
to
we're
a,
talking
you know,
about.
Go to a job to earn money to pay your mortgage and your light bill because you don't have a light bill, you know. And
right.
Energy, when energy costs go down, everything is less expensive, you know.
Yeah, and so what we're returning to is this island where everything's available to us, right? From
right,
your dream,
right,
so powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess the question is, how do we raise consciousness, right, individually and collectively?
Well, you're doing it through your TV, radio show, and books, you know.
Yes,
you're right on
you.
The cutting edge of raising consciousness. I mean,
well,
what I'm doing, you know, I treat people who are deathly ill from their breast implants and they can't meditate. Many of them are very spiritual. They were very spiritual before they got sick. And what I do is get the crap out of them so that they can return on their spiritual journey. So that's my little niche, you know.
Well, it's really,
when people are super sick, they, you know, they can't do much, you know. I mean, they certainly can't do their purpose. You know, they're trying to survive.
Well, and that's the powerful metaphor, because what you're saying about removing that crap is really the same way I do when I work with individuals one-on-one. It's, you know, removing those stories and those beliefs we have about
mm-hmm.
ourselves.
Right.
You know, I work in the field of addiction and addiction recovery, as well as, you know, helping people with their awakening process, which really is one and the same. It's that same process. It's like, here we are, whole and perfect and divine. And we don't know that because we have this collection of things that are happening in the physical realm that seem to keep us stuck in our level of consciousness. So it's not about attaining, it's about removing or dismantling those things which
mm-hmm.
stand in the way. So it sounds like you and I are doing the exact same work, just with slightly different manifestation. I love that.
Right. I do the physical stuff. so that they can get on with their spiritual and not be so, you know, completely, all their lives are just ruined because they can't do anything. You know, they stay in bed all day. So, yeah, and educate women, you know, so that, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't have breast implants. I'm just saying that you should know what their life expectancy are. You should know what not to get if you have a methylation defect or a detoxification defect or a HLA type that or genetic type that is going to be real sensitive to silicone and create autoimmune disease. You know, you just, it's just knowledge. You know, all this stuff's published in the literature or, you know, I put it together with clinical stuff, but and it is all very logical. You know, I mean, it's just common sense. It's not a good idea to go outside and ride a motorcycle without a helmet on. You know, it's just not real smart, you know. So you got to be smart when you're going to get breast implants, you know. You got to know what you're getting into. Not go in a moldy building when you have saline implants because you can breathe the mold in and it can get around and inside some of the implants.
Wow.
So that's what I do.
Wow.
But a lot of my patients say that their clairvoyance or their spiritual gifts return after they get better. They can meditate again. When you're real sick, it's hard to meditate, you know. If you're in chronic pain, you know, you just can't attain those levels of peace and, you know, just can't do it.
Yeah, so the physical, that dense physical reality can prevent us from living, you know, or connecting with our higher self, which is fascinating to me as we're having
especially
this conversation.
With pain.
Yeah,
fibromyalgia type pain, you know, real deep bone pain, a chronic pain that nothing touches. You know, you've got to get that to go away in order to get back on track.
Yeah, and I'm drawing the parallel with in working with people that are in an addiction. You know, same thing.
Yeah, they have emotional pain. They have a lot of shame. Shame
exactly.
is a big thing with certain addictions, with drug addictions and alcohol addictions. They try to, you said in your book, they try to, you know, anesthetize themselves against their bad feelings about themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And so when people come into recovery, you know, they put down the addiction and so many people feel like, okay, now it's going to be over because I've let go of my addiction, and that's usually right exactly where it begins, because there might be a euphoric period after, you know, 20 days of sobriety, but then what usually happens is they start to recognize that shame that drove the addiction is still alive within
them. Coming back
up.
Yeah.
And
that's
usually
true,
much more pronounced than before, because, you know, as you just said, they're not numbing it out anymore. So the work that I do really is helping them to address that shame. And, you know, talk about a paradoxical process, because shame, by its very nature, wants us to not look, right? So shame gets buried, you know, in the shadow.
Yeah,
and yet what is wanted and needed is to reveal that through vulnerability and authenticity. And so that's really the work I do, is assisting people in really bringing that into the light. As Carl Jung says, when it's in our subconscious, we call it fate. It's running the show, and we call it fate. Not until we bring it into the light that we can release that shame and then return. Again, it always comes back to returning to that, our true nature, which to me is wholeness and perfection.
Yeah, you might want to look up a book. One of my good friends, who's a psychiatrist, studied with Discalos on Cyprus before he died. And he met another guy there who was a family practice doctor, and together they wrote a book on the spiritual aspects of addiction. Discalus said something very interesting. He said, every time you have a desire thought, like want a drink, want that cocaine or whatever, it takes a little bit of your etheric away, your etheric energy away, because he can see the holes being punched by the desire thoughts, and to become weaker and weaker and weaker. Isn't that interesting that he could see all that?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And, but Discalus was a wonderful teacher. I don't know if you've ever read anything he wrote, but he was just a wonderful master. And he used to poke fun at Sai Baba and vice versa. They used to so funny. It was really funny. But basically, Nick is a psychiatrist who is spiritually based, like I'm a plastic surgeon who's spiritually based, and he wrote this book with this family practice doctor who I can't remember the name. I'd interviewed Nick on the book, obviously, and that book is all about the spiritual aspects of addiction. So you might want to, you know, take a look at it.
Yeah,
I'm sure
thank
you
for
still
that.
Get it somewhere. Yeah, yeah. Nick Demetri is his name, and I think it's R-Y. He's Greek, Demetri. So you can look that up.
Great,
and I can't remember exactly the name of the book, but addiction and healing and those words are in it, you know. The word love may be in it too.
Well, perfect. Yeah, it's interesting because we really live in a culture that, you know, a lot of people, we view addiction as pretty, you know, limited, but many of us, as you're saying, are addicted to, you know, as the Buddhists
mm-hmm.
say, you
other
know, clinging,
things, yeah.
you know, striving and clinging yeah. and aversion, clinging and aversion, which is an addiction of our culture. So,
yeah.
And as we let those go and we again return
right.
back to our true nature, life changes dramatically. We find ourselves on that island.
Can I tell you my theory about addiction? It's really very
sure.
interesting.
Yeah.
I have a theory about addiction. I was told at one point in meditation that there are 12 dark lords in the fourth dimension. And one of them, for example, is just for political corruption. Isn't that interesting? But one
yeah.
of them is for addiction. And addiction, the dark lord for addiction doesn't go after people who are criminals, doesn't go after people who are, you know, like the person selling cocaine on the street. That person doesn't get addicted to cocaine. You realize that, right? They don't
yes,
get addicted.
Most of the time, yeah.
The person who gets addicted to cocaine is a spiritually based person who gets driven off their path into that addiction. So a lot of people with alcohol and serious drug addictions are really wonderful people, very spiritual people that get driven off the path.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And you know, people don't know that. People don't, I mean, you know, because they kind of demonize addicts, you know. You know, the heroin addict you see on the street. Oh, there, you know, you have a judgment about them, right?
Right.
Isn't necessarily true.
No, well, of course, when we...
Especially
in our...
when you realize that dark lords are assigned to these people to get them addicted.
Mm.
Interesting, huh? Now, of course,
yeah.
that's all part of their path because they're not victims of the dark lord. Because when they finally hit bottom and lose everything, then something within them, their higher self, takes over and pulls them up out of it. And then that connection is there because, like you said, everything else is gone except for that connection. So, you know.
Right, right.
So it's a path that people can then, you know, get a higher level of consciousness through. It's not necessarily a very pleasant path, I wouldn't think. I mean, look at people going through, you know, withdrawal and rehab, you know. It's not, but, you know, look at how many really great people in Hollywood get addicted.
Yeah, and I love where you're going because it, in the same way that we open this show talking about our own experiences, addiction is, and, you know, through this framework, it's a great way to reach that place of surrender so that we can,
yeah.
you know, recognize our true nature. It's so,
yeah.
and it's fascinating that, like, as you said, you know, in like a certain level of consciousness, of course, there is a judgment placed on that as, you know,
yeah.
a bad, you know, and so this isn't about good and bad and right and wrong. I talk about that a lot in my book, as I'm sure you saw,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, this higher level of consciousness is about moving beyond the concept of separation, of duality, and really into aligning with the oneness of each of us. So,
well,
you know,
I quit judging people when I read Edgar Cayce, and Edgar Cayce said, you know, sometimes people say somebody was supposed to be president, but they were very spiritually evolved and really had no ambition. Well, they're given the overlay of ambition because their job is to be president, okay? And often, if you study their life, they knew at a young age they were supposed to be president. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I think
yeah,
that's fascinating.
Absolutely.
But they're given the overlay of ambition. So you might say, you know, gee, Obama was really ambitious. Well, yeah, but, you know, that could be an overlay because... or real egotistical, you know, because some people have said he's egotistical, okay, that could be an overlay to get him where he is, because without it, it would be hard for him to be a political candidate, you see?
Absolutely, and that's what we were talking about, where personality and spirit can get blended in powerful ways.
So Edgar Cayce said, like he was giving a reading, he was saying that, you know, some woman had to forgive her father. She said, your father was a very spiritual being, but he was given an overlay of alcoholism because he had to learn certain lessons, you see. In other words, he wasn't really an alcoholic. I mean, it was like he was allowed to become an alcoholic because that was the way he was going to learn what he needed to learn. So you can't even judge him for being an alcoholic because it's an overlay. It's like given that he was going to do that. So she had to forgive him for being an alcoholic, you know, instead of saying, judging him and saying he should have been able to resist that. Well, maybe he couldn't. You know, maybe that overlay was really there.
Yeah.
So, you know, your nemesis, your enemy, your person that, you know, you seem to be in conflict with all the time, they may have overlays. They may actually be your best friend in spirit, but down here they have this overlay that is annoying to you, you know.
Yeah, and the one question that I would have about that is then if we have an overlay of addiction and we want that to change, what do we do with that? Because there's a way to accelerate the process of awakening so that we don't have to stay stuck there. And I know
absolutely.
You and I both understand that, yeah.
Well, this is a free will planet. You know, this is one of 37 planets. It's the Luciferian experiment of free will. Lucifer petitioned the administration for more free will on these 37 planets, and it was granted. Now, the ascension is supposed to be the reversal of the Luciferian rebellion. So that's kind of interesting, because when the Luciferian rebellion was granted, the administration put a veil over all the planets so that when we come in here, we forget who we are. We even forget our past lives unless we're very spiritually evolved. That's that veil of forgetfulness.
Yeah.
That's part of the free will experiment. Now, free will is only in 37 planets in the entire universe. Think about that. Think about how many millions and maybe billions of planets there are. So free will is not the usual system. You know, we think it is because we're in it right now. But this is rare. This is a rare experiment, and it is coming to an end. And the experiment, you know, you might ask, well, how'd the experiment go? Well, okay, you had genocide, you had, you know, wiping out of animal species, you had polluting of the oceans. It's really amazing at how much we forgot who we really are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I
think
that's
pretty amazing experiment, you know. Who knew that that would happen?
And that we can draw a parallel to the original conversation that, you know, perhaps we've chosen to be here in this kind of dense reality so that we can awaken, so that we can remember
exactly.
who we essentially are. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, we're all here working, helping the planet ascend, helping each other ascend, obviously, in vibration and in consciousness. And really, we're just trying to get back to who we actually are in eternity, you know. So anyway, there's nothing really dangerous here.
Right.
But
right.
you can suffer, you know, the problem is, you know, I mean, if you are ending up with certain circumstances, you can suffer a great deal. So you have to kind of navigate around that, you know.
Yeah, and that's really one of my primary intentions for writing the book, Conscious Being, is offering some tools and some ways for people to really, you know, evolve in consciousness through these. Mm-hmm. I've given it some framework of like four different levels, and I know that's just the mind trying to create that. There may be many others, there may be less than that, but ultimately a mm-hmm. way to recognize that as we move into what I call the mystical realm is that we are all one and we're all connected at the level of spirit. And some really practical ways to move through some of these dense experiences like addiction, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, physical health issues and mental health issues so that we can evolve now, you know, because this is about now, not about, you know, the old paradigm of I'm going to do this so I can get into heaven is just something that is just not, that seems to be an antiquated concept in what's happening right now, which is we're all recognizing that heaven actually is a state of consciousness that exists now.
Right.
And so I'm offering ways to work with that and access that, you know, in the here and now so that we can really find ourselves living on, I keep going back to your beautiful dream about the island where it's all,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think of that island as heaven, really, and that's a state
right.
of consciousness that each of us can attain now.
It is, yeah. Well, would you like to give your contact information?
Well, I would love that. Thank you so much. Yeah, you can find me online at tjwoodward.com. That's really the best place because there you can see there's links to the book, to Awakened Living, which is our spiritual community in San Francisco, also to my counseling practice. I'm an awakening coach, which means that I really assist people in moving through some of these levels of consciousness so that we can attain a state of connection and oneness. And I do that individually with clients as well. So tjwoodward.com is the best place to find all of that.
Great. Well, do you have any words of wisdom for the listening audience to leave them with?
Well, I think the word of wisdom that I would have is really to kind of recap this conversation, which is recognizing that the truth of who we are is this state of bliss, this wholeness and perfection, this oneness, and that what we've done for whatever reason, you know, chosen to be here on this planet at this time, to experience, for whatever reason, to experience separation, fear, doubt, shame, addiction, darkness, and that each of us, actually, it is our birthright to live this awakened life. And that each of us can unlearn the stuff that we've been taught. And what I mean by stuff is the ideas about ourselves and the world that we've gathered. And that as we release those and let go of those, we do what I call the great remembering. We remember this mm-hmm. essential self and knowing that's who and what we truly are. So my word of wisdom is just, you know, for those of us on this path of awakening, that it is very important that each of us do our inner work right now because consciousness is evolving rapidly.
Yep, and you don't want to be left behind.
Exactly.
There's even a Christian series, Left Behind.
There you go.
Keep up. Yeah, well, your book really is a very complete work of this topic that, again, takes from many different things, everywhere from, you know, our American scientists to the Tao, you know, to Buddhism, to Christianity principles, you know, all of it is in here. Because all of the religions do have at their core what we're talking about. Sometimes it's hidden from the masses, you know, sometimes the masses think they have to give 10% to get into heaven, but you know, at the very core of all of it. I mean, look at the Pope. I mean, the Pope is out there talking about some pretty interesting spiritual principles, you know.
Yeah,
and not everybody's going to agree with everything he says, but you know,
right.
He's at the core, the Pope is a pretty interesting person, you know.
Yeah.
You ought to pay attention to what he's saying, you know.
Yeah,
but anyway, well, thank you so much for joining us, TJ. It's been a delightful conversation, and good luck with your ministry.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be with you and be in this conversation. I love it. There's nothing I love more than having this conversation. So thank you for the honor.
Well, great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. Next week, we're going to be interviewing Sherry Breschia, Taste No Pain and Great Taste No Gluten. I guess it's gluten cookbooks and what we can have better health without gluten in certain cases. Then Dr. Jill Carnahan is going to join me on the 10th of October to talk about mold toxicity exposure and treatment. She treats a lot of people with sick building syndrome, and I treat a lot of people with mold in their breast implants, so we'll share what we know. And then Donna Smith Moncrieve is back on the 17th to talk about physical mediumship. Her book, Medium 7, is actually a scientific treatise on mediumship, which is quite good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And then Peter Sterling, who's a musician doing spiritual music, will be on at the 24th of October, Hear the Angels Sing, his book. So join us for those authors, and please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.